Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
I think we've got to say it. I think I've got to say it. I think it has to be said. Anything is possible. Any given Sunday. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to their third consecutive AFC Championship game. They are hosting their third consecutive AFC Championship game. Something that the New England Patriots never did. Something that no one in the AFC has ever done. Something that only one team has ever done anywhere around the league. It happened in the NFC side. It was Andy Reid's Philadelphia Eagles. The Chiefs have done it. They have locked up their spot in the AFC Championship game. And, I mean, just how we drew it up. You know, it ends with Chad Henne just letting it hang on 3rd and 15. Scramble, dive, 4th and 1, 4th and inches. Shotgun, let's throw for it. Let's wrap this ball game up, boys and girls. Just how Daryl Williams getting all... Just how we all drew it up. 22-17 with Chad Henne and Patrick Mahomes with a maybe concussion that doesn't look like, never looked like a concussion. I mean, just everything about this game was about as strange as could be. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This is Time's Ours alongside Nate Taylor. No Seth Kaiser today. He's on vacation for the first time in, I believe, 14 years. So, no Seth.
What a time. What perfection in terms of, you know, just the most chaotic game of the entire season at the most important time of the season.
It's a man who knows, a man who can pick his spots. You know, here's what I'll say, Nate. Before we just absolutely cannonball into the embarrassment of topics around this game right now, I don't want to say only weird games. I do not want to give this game that token. Because this game was weirder than a weird game. This game was terrifying for a little bit late in there. This game had, a terrifying moment of Patrick Mahomes standing up wobbly. And I was worried about his knee. And then as soon as I realized it wasn't his knee, I was worried about his brain. And then now it might not have been a concussion. But what was it? I can't separate the weirdness from the success of this game, where, again, they won it, and it felt like they might not for a little while in there. How are you, Nate? How did you feel over the course of this game? How do you feel now?
I feel like all hands are, like the playoffs are so fun for a lot of reasons, and they're exciting, but you have to be reminded that, and this is partly my story, is that, like, at any moment, these things can turn so quickly. Mm. And so, if you're a Chiefs fan, you probably had a lot of dark days, most notably of, like, the 1990s Marty Schottenheimer era, probably in the second half. But I mean, this team is really, really talented, and they are mentally tough. And for a guy that we had not seen really outside of week 17 in any context over the last two seasons, is still able to execute at the biggest moments of the game, despite a mistake. So, look, I feel like the Chiefs are very fortunate to survive the Brown scare. But it just shows you how difficult it is to not only just win one Super Bowl, right, Josh?
Yep.
But to do it back-to-back, I mean, you need a lot of things to go your way. And despite what happened with Patrick Mahomes, they still got enough things to go their way. And they knew the situation the moment he left the game. And I think that is a credit to the team as a whole, because there's really nothing to prepare you for that when your franchise quarterback goes down in the middle of the third quarter.
That idea of, wow, this is hard to do time and time again is exactly, that was the exact prevailing thought that I had to take away from this game, was just the fragility of it all gets kind of glossed over whenever you go ostensibly 14-1, right? Whenever you have one sort of strike on your record and you have the quarterback who time and time again, we will just say over and over, this dude erases deficits. He doesn't make mistakes. He throws touchdowns, but not interceptions. He's going to be in the top two MVP voting every year for the next decade, all that stuff. All of that's true, but he can also get hurt. And it had been long enough since that day in Denver when he dislocated his kneecap last year. And frankly, I even thought leading up to this game, it didn't really feel like a playoff game to me as it was starting, because, I don't know, you just sort of think that the Chiefs are going to end up winning because they have Patrick Mahomes. Without him out there, that all got turned on its head in an enormous way. So let's talk about that some at the front here, Nate. Obviously, the biggest story other than simply survive in advance is that Patrick Mahomes gets tackled on an option which looked very similar to the one he scored a touchdown on. Rewatched those plays. I'm 100% confident, mm-hmm. more than I have. But they looked relatively similar. One was a, you know, a triumph, and then the next one was the dumbest play call in Andy Reid's career. if you just read Twitter, I'm saying. But they looked relatively similar. But on the second one, Mahomes goes down. He's tackled awkwardly. He ends up, yes. with an arm kind of around his neck. It was not a helmet-to-helmet hit. It was not a helmet to ground hit. It was just the helmet of the tackler hit him kind of by the M in Mahomes on his back, kind of shoulder ish. Mack Wilson was the linebacker who delivered the tackle, and then Mahomes came up and he looked wobbly. Take me to that moment, and then what happened? What followed that, Nate?
I agree with everything you just said. It felt, in rewatching it and talking to a couple people, it's more of a clothesline that kind of goes wrong. Mm. And you know, I think whether it's Bobby Shute, his longtime trainer, Patrick Mahomes' longtime trainer, whether it's Randy Mahomes, Miss Patrick Mahomes' mother, there was an understanding that, hey, like, maybe this wasn't the most respectable play from Mack Wilson, the linebacker from the Browns. He is playing really hard, and these are split-second decisions on an option play that the Browns actually covered pretty well. Mm. They had somebody on the outside for Darrell Williams. Patrick Mahomes makes the right decision because he's the closest to the yard to gain, keeps the ball, but is tackled in a manner that is just not normal. So he kind of rolls, but he kind of, like, you know, gets under himself in terms of his legs. Andy Reid said he hit the back of his head, although his head never actually touched the turf. Mm-hmm. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I don't think his helmet ever hit grass, which is just bizarre.
So, you know, Mack Wilson is trying to go for the ball, but at the same time, not horse collar Mahomes, but at the same time, not do a helmet to helmet. And these are all the things you have to consider in like less than a second.
Yeah.
And I think as they collided, they just landed really awkwardly, which is very similar to what happened in Denver last year, yep. where I think it was Wolf from the Broncos whose leg and entire body weight basically, you know, on the quarterback sneak shifted down in a diagonal motion to Patrick Mahomes' leg.
Yeah.
Which led to his dislocated kneecap. I've always said this, and this is not new, and you saw it in the game before the injury, Josh. The one thing that Patrick Mahomes is not excellent in is getting down.
Mm.
He's, and you're not asking him to slide on that play necessarily, but he's always looked somewhat awkward going to the ground, whether he's sliding head first or feet first. there were a couple plays in the first half when it became clear that, yes, this toe injury was having a little effect on him. He was even going, as you were seeing him go down, like, wow, how should I do this exactly as I try to, you know, obviously, you know, put in my mind, like, I don't want to mess up my toe even further, but I also don't want to take a big hit, and I'm not close enough to the out of bounds. Some people will obviously question the play call. Because it had worked so well on the first drive that ended in the one-yard touchdown run, I think that's the reason Andy Reid went back to it, because it had worked previously, and the idea of just like, hey, you just don't see that outcome coming. But I don't know. It's like I can go back and forth. I don't think Mac Wilson did anything bad. Obviously, both players have sort of acknowledged this after the game. Mac telling Patrick, hey, like, wasn't on purpose. Patrick saying, like, it's all good. But I don't know if it was more neck related versus the back of the head, but immediately you are super concerned because the moment he tried to get up, he was dazed and he stumbled.
The play call, and again, I've kind of shown my hand as to how I feel like evaluating play calls is a purely that play call was wait for results sort of business.
Yep.
It is very odd to me that, you know, on third and one, that's the play call, and Patrick Mahomes will never sneak a football in his time wearing red ever again.
I told you all that they are never running a quarterback sneak. And I mean, like, the pitch option has kind of worked.
Totally. I don't know. Totally. But quarterback sneaks also work. It working doesn't really matter, it doesn't seem. It's just like, well, he got hurt on this, so let's not do that again. Like, I understand that the sneak means you end up in a pile, but Tom Brady's done 9,000 of those, and it's never done anything. And now Mahomes, you know, gets hurt on the option. Are they going to run the option in the Super Bowl if they're there, whatever? I don't know, man. But Mahomes gets hurt there, and the process of him getting the concussion evaluation, going into the protocol, and then being ruled out happens relatively quickly, it seems. And obviously the game's continuing as that's all going on. But knowing that the Chiefs won, we'll talk about some of the stuff that happened in the game in a minute here. But in terms of looking forward from now, and in terms also, Nate, of what you heard from Andy Reid, and even, you know, Chad Haney mentioned that Mahomes was in good spirits and whatnot. The most newsworthy thing that I had seen as of nearing midnight on Sunday night is from Jay Glazer. He was on Fox a little bit earlier, and he said this. He said, right now he's in the concussion protocol. You see him having a hard time getting up and walking, as the video was playing then. So it's more so because they're saying it was almost like he got choked out. Not so much a concussion, but he still has to go through the concussion protocol. He was trying to get himself back in this game, though, so there's a lot of confidence that he'll be able to go next week. We also saw him, like, running into the locker room to start the concussion protocol process after his injury. Do you buy what Glazer's selling there? Do you think that that tracks what you saw and what you've heard elsewhere over the course of the night?
I know that there's confusion regarding whether or not Patrick Mahomes has a concussion. Now, the team said that he was out because he was in the concussion protocol. Mm-hmm. That leads one to believe that, like, Patrick Mahomes has a concussion. Mm-hmm. Now, moving forward, they're going to have another concussion evaluation tomorrow, and hopefully we'll get more clarity. Andy Reid is
Monday.
Scheduled to talk.
That's Monday for the record, depending on this. Yeah.
Sorry, yes, on Monday. And so Andy Reid is expected to give hopefully another update on Monday as well. There is a 5-step process if Patrick Mahomes is fully in the concussion protocol. Obviously, this is all based on his baseline test that you were given during the preseason training camp. There wasn't a preseason this year, but you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So here's where you are cognitively from, like, you know, baseline standpoint. And you go through the evaluation in the blue medical tent. Then you went into the locker room, and it was diagnosed that he was in the protocol. That being said, the neck, going through concussion history, understanding what happens, understanding that like everybody's brain reacts differently to head contact. Mm. The neck is kind of an important part of this, just because, you know, when you go through, whether it's whiplash or something like what Lamar Jackson occurred with on Saturday against Buffalo, like the back of the head is always a tender spot. I would lead myself to believe and to tell others that, you know, if the neck is involved, you're now going to have to, one, understand like where, if he does feel pain, where it is. And then two, because that may have to be treated, obviously. And then two, from the protocol standpoint, like, I guess they're going to find out if he's obviously sensitive to light, if he needs more rest. You have to do non-contact work. You have to do some level of exercising. Then there's some level of football activities, but that's usually individual towards the side. And then you can get into, like, you know, a normal practice. The Chiefs need all of that to kind of occur by Friday. Mm-hmm. And that's asking a lot. Now, Patrick Mahomes came back from the dislocated kneecap at a rate quicker than most. Didn't even need surgery. This is different. And as I sort of wrote in The Athletic, like his status is going to be uncertain for most of this week. Even if they find out that he doesn't have concussion-like symptoms by Monday/tomorrow, it's still going to be, I would assume the league will take, you know, the necessary procedures for them to really evaluate him all week long, because it takes an independent neurologist to basically clear him to play, regardless of what the Chiefs medical staff says. Like, somebody who is not affiliated with the team will have to go through Patrick Mahomes' baseline, will have to see him go through each of the five steps, and also suggest that he is deemed ready to play from an independent standpoint. It's asking a lot. It can happen by Friday, Josh, but that, you know, it's going to be an incremental step as we go.
One thing we've talked about a handful of times, just, you know, you got to be able to practice by Friday, or you got to get some reps out there at some point. Obviously, Sammy Watkins did not play in this game, nor did Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I imagine that whatever they can get from Mahomes in the week leading up will be, they'll take whatever they can get to get him out there. The rules are going to be a little bit different, even though I don't think those are, like, you know, those aren't rules to keep people out who are able to play. That's just sort of a little rule of thumb. I imagine that if there's an all clear any point from that independent neurologist, the Chiefs will take whatever they could get. Is that fair?
I think so. I mean, it's just, concussions are just so unique to everybody. And, you know, there's been guys in the past who said, I feel fine 1 minute, and then for whatever reason, like, you know, symptoms start again. Or I get to this portion of the protocol, and then I have, you know, a setback, or I just don't feel the way I normally do. Like, who knows how the future is going to go? It makes this week moving forward extremely fascinating. But, you know, I think it's irresponsible for people to say, like, he's going to be back. Like, we just can't say that yet. You hope that he's fine. You hope that from the Chiefs standpoint, in terms of trying to get to a second straight Super Bowl, that he's fine. But, man, that's asking a lot. And I would tell fans, even if he doesn't practice Wednesday, even if he doesn't practice Thursday, it can still kind of go either way.
Obviously, that will bear extremely close watching. We might get a little bit of an update on Monday, just because I don't know. My hunch, Nate, is that those tests will probably still, I don't know if those tests will still be ongoing by the time Andy Reid talks to the media. I certainly don't think we'll have anything definitive on Monday, but maybe a brief update.
I would hope so.
Okay.
I would hope so. Now, you also have to keep in mind too, like, still got to go through the COVID test as well. Like, yeah. So the way it The way I assume it will work, and I can kind of safely assume this, most players get tested in the morning for obvious reasons, because that the earlier you do it, the quicker you can get the returns on the results, and you can kind of move forward. So Patrick is still going to have to go through COVID testing. I am assuming that they're going to try to limit his time at the facility because, one, players aren't allowed to be at the facility on Monday and Tuesday outside of, like, getting tested to try to, you know, decrease the exposure or potential outbreak. So I assume he'll go through much of the evaluation in the morning. And then it's basically just going to have to be incremental reports about how he's feeling. And, you know, I we're doing this live, obviously, folks. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for me to understand, like, what exactly is going to happen just because it's such a weird play to observe.
Yeah.
Can we just acknowledge that one more time?
Yes,
absolutely. It is such a weird play. I can't say definitively if he has a concussion. The Chiefs had mixed messaging during the game,
yep.
Which was like, no, he's out. Well, is he in the protocol? He's out in the concussion protocol. Well, does that mean he has a concussion? I guess that means he has a concussion. Some people were tweeting at me, Josh, that, like, because of the neck and what happened, maybe, you know, it's just blood flow, airflow, like, who knows?
Right. Which might track with what Glazer was getting at. That, like,
it's a possibility. I mean, who's, you know, we usually talk to Pat. I should also say this, too. We usually talk to Patrick on Wednesday. That probably ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So we won't get his perspective until maybe after the game Sunday. Like, who knows? If he's cleared to play Friday, maybe he would give comments as to what his week has been through on that day. Again, I don't know, but it's hard to get anything, I think, real substantive for a couple days would be the most responsible way I could share this.
I think that's fair. The one thing that I just that I can't help but think about, and that I was thinking in the time, was just how I saw somebody tweeted about this. I even texted a girlfriend Renee, as she is known in pretty much all audio forms. I said, this here is what Chiefs football was like before Patrick Mahomes.
Mm.
And it wasn't, because it's not like hopeless. You're not like, it's not over. It's still Andy Reid's team and everything. And there's a competent quarterback back there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really different. It is so different. With Patrick Mahomes, you assume that a deficit's going to be erased, and you definitely assume that a lead is going to be protected. And with Chad Henne out there, it just felt very similar, and a sense of kind of impending doom, I think, that I had not felt from a Chiefs football game in a very long time. Maybe the first quarter of the Texans game, just because it was like, oh, this is, here's the letdown. But even then, mm-hmm. there was hope that came pretty quickly thereafter. This one was different because it was just like, well, if they lose the lead, it's probably not coming back. And that was a terrifying situation. Also, to mention the lose the lead thing, Chiefs defense gave up 17 points to a pretty good offense. An offense mm-hmm. that scored 40-something against the Steelers last week. That I didn't see that coming. Among things I didn't see coming from this game, Brown 17 is not a phrase I expected to say very much.
No. I had them scoring in the low 20s, depending upon, you know, no major injuries to anybody. So look, the Chiefs defense needs all the praise, all the credit. The game felt tight, obviously, once Patrick goes down. But you have to remember, Chad Henne leads them to a field goal. Harrison Butker finally made a kick from 33 yards.
We'll get to him, I think.
On the ensuing possession, look, it took the Browns 18 plays, a fourth down conversion, and honestly the best run of Kareem Hunt in the game mm-hmm. to score a touchdown. So it's 17-22, and I don't know what Chad Henne was doing on that first 25.
Reid after the game saying, I take responsibility for that interception.
That's not old Blake.
Made me laugh out loud in the radio studio. Because here's the thing. Maybe good old EB got into the headset and said, hey, Chad, take a shot here, all right?
You know, let that thing fly, boy.
Let it fly. Let it fly one time. Maybe you said that. Clearly, there was a deep shot. I think it was to DeMarcus Robinson that was, you know, supposed to be there. But listen, Chad Henne's a grown-up. Chad Henne's been in this league a long time. Chad Henne goes, you know what? I think if I throw that ball, it's probably going to get picked off. Let me go ahead and dump it off to Darrow Williams. I don't even know if he was in that play. I assume he was because he was in most plays. Let me go ahead and dump this one off to literally anyone, or I'll throw it away, or I'll take the whatever. You know, man, I'm going to take the shot if I can. It was 25 yards to go, but it was also first down.
Yep.
Chad Henne's an
adult. And that's the problem. It wasn't third down.
No, it sure wasn't.
First down.
It sure wasn't.
I think the Browns played a cover three where they were just like, nobody better get behind you, even with Chad Henne out here. Yep. And that did not happen.
Yeah, sure. So, yep, that worked. They did it.
So it's legitimately tight. If the Browns go 80 yards and getting the ball with 8 minutes left, exactly 8 minutes left with the ball, you score a touchdown, you immediately take the lead. The Chiefs defense didn't let them get past midfield.
Yeah.
I sort of broke these plays down in my article, but Chris Jones showed up. Mm. Tyrann Mathieu showed up. Charvarius Ward did a great job of playing cover three zone on the third down snap, but had the speed, the quickness, and the ability to understand that he was using the sideline as his friend to tackle Kareem Hunt for a 2 yard gain on a pass that should have gone for more than 2 yards. Spagnuolo beat them on a screen with a blitz that was really well timed. And Frank Clark understood the situation in terms of setting the edge, playing Nick. He was in Nick Chubb's face the entire game. And it won't show up on the stat sheet, but like Frank Clark had a hell of a game. And so when they knew the season was literally on their backs, they did what they were supposed to do. If you're a championship team, like, you know, Patrick Mahomes may not be on the field. He may be in the locker room with, you know, what appears to be a concussion. Like, your job is to still go out there and play defense at a high level. And they went out there and they did it. Which obviously gave Henne another opportunity to sort of redeem himself for, you know, that interception. I just don't want fans to lose sight of just how impressive that was, because the Browns has clearly gotten some momentum. They clearly started to understand what worked against the Chiefs defense. People forget that Rashad Breeland also in the concussion protocol.
Yep.
He was not on the field for these last snaps. So yeah, I mean, it was an important stretch, and the Browns had a real opportunity. But, you know, some of the Chiefs' best defenders made sure that they never even got close to the end zone.
And also, like, this is going to seem kind of impossible, but the Browns' offense was doing some work. Baker looked pretty good. I was pretty impressed by Baker Mayfield, which I'm going to pull up as, you know, he was 23 of 37. Wait a second, man. He had 14 incompletions, 23 completions. I feel like 90% of his incompletions were dropped or thrown away.
Yep.
And Stefanski was doing some good work. And the Chiefs defense just also was doing good work. Like, that was not a game where you're just like, we really clowned Sam Darnold for a while. No, like, the Browns look pretty good offensively in a way that the Chiefs just stood pat with, no pun intended.
Yes, and the game before Patrick's injury, the most important play, and literally turns the momentum completely in the Chiefs' favor, which gives you a big enough lead for your defense to sort of, you know, protect, is Dan Sorensen coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And hitting the living you-know-what out of Rashad Higgins. Was it a legal hit? Not really, but that's why they call him Dirty Dan in a lot of respects.
All right, I got three things on that play. I got three things on that. This whole podcast could have been about that play if Patrick Mahomes just wouldn't have gotten hurt. I got three things about that play. Huge, huge play. Swinging play. Changes the game right there in that space. Number one, you mentioned already. I tweeted this out, and you know what? I've cooled down a little bit, so I don't regret calling these people dorks, but I called people dorks. said, if any of you dorks who were tweeting me during the national, during the college football playoff about targeting, the Clemson player got ejected for targeting. Like, well, you know, they call that right most of the time. That's a, that rule's pretty consistently called. You can't lower your helmet like that. That bleep happens all the time, every other play across the sport of football. It just happens all the time. It's just, it's okay to admit that that rule is like enforced really differently from time to time. And it's also Kareem Hunt could have that flag thrown against him 90% of his carries. Dude ducks his head, whatever. It's fine. But that could have been a flag. It was helmet level with helmet lowered his head. I get it. Also, it was the only way he was going to stop him there. Whatever. That, I think, was... I think I got two out of three things in there. The other thing I want to say, and I want to say it in this context so everybody knows that I mean it. That rule stinks. It's a crappy rule. It's just a bad rule. Why should fumbling out of the back of the end zone give the other team the ball on a touchback? That's stupid. It's a stupid rule. It benefited the Chiefs, and I still think it's a dumb, dumb rule that should not result in a turnover any more than fumbling out of bounds would result in a turnover. I feel like saying that now is important because I cannot be called a homer for that take.
What's interesting is that, and I know Chiefs fans are probably thinking about this too, like, okay, there was no penalty for a horse, not a horse collar, but like kind of a clothesline on like reigning Super Bowl MVP. There's no flag there. What's more egregious is literally the play happening in front of you and being like, no, I'm worried about the ball. not why my man fumbled the ball. I feel really bad for Cleveland fans just because if they score that touchdown the way they're supposed to, if he's a split second, just a tick faster, man, you're looking at 16-10 game. Maybe they hold the Chiefs to not a field goal in the last minute. They get the ball back. You know, maybe they have a chance to take the lead. It was interesting, Josh, to know that like everybody was nervous and the Browns never led in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like if they did lose the lead, it wasn't coming back. Because you didn't have Mahomes to bring it back.
Yeah, well, Chad Henne, so this may get a little bit ahead of ourselves, but Chad Henne does not run the 2-minute drill often in practice. Mm-hmm. Just gonna run that out there. Chad Henne in no huddle is normally with scout team or second teamers, because you know he's a backup quarterback. He has not had many of those reps with Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. So you're right. If you lose the lead in the fourth quarter, things would have changed a lot differently. And now you're forcing Henne to throw the ball deeper with the defense sort of anticipating that. So you're right. I mean, when Mahomes leaves the game, they essentially have a 12-point lead because Henne and, you know, shout out to Darrell Williams. Darrell Williams understood the situation, was like, I need to run hard right now because we're at midfield. And let's at least get a field goal out of this. So they take a 22-10 lead. And at that point, you are telling yourself, like, they can't fall behind. And it's wild to me, Josh, that you could fumble the ball into the end zone and you lose your possession. And that's a worse effect than what Chad Henne did, which was basically throw a punt into the end zone.
Yeah, it's the same result.
Totally, but it's a worse result because you're that close,
right,
to scoring.
Right.
But the ball after the play is over essentially ends up in the same place.
Yep. Yeah, it's unbelievable. The other thing that I just remembered, there were three things. The other thing is that Dan Sorensen got a defensive pass interference penalty literally 2 minutes before that play happened. And I tweeted literally at that moment, guys, don't worry about it. This just means that Dan Sorensen's going to have a game-breaking turnover in the fourth quarter. And then it happened 2 minutes later. And I meant he's going to do that now. Because that's what Dan Sorensen does. That's just what he does, period.
Look, a lot of people didn't understand how subtle we were with the grit and grind trick-or-treat Tony Allen reference to Dan Sorensen. But guys, it is a legitimate comp. The man may get smoked on a play, but he gonna D you up on that next one. Who knows if it's legal? Well, it's the playoffs. And you throw that flag. Because Dan's going to be out there to do his job. And his job is to be fierce and to be really close to whatever the definition of what you think dirty is.
Unbelievable. The definition of what you think dirty is.
It's what you think the definition is. Like, in the press box, I was like, look, man, it's helmet to helmet. Do the Chiefs really need to promote Dirty Dan on Twitter right now? Like, we got to get this man a new nickname. No, but people love it. And it's what you think dirty means. It's the, I'm going to get real tough. I'm going to get real close here, guys.
Okay. All right. Tiptoe.
The same thing that, like, it is the same thing of, like, well, what do you think great means? Well, whatever you think great means is whatever you think great means. Whatever you think dirty means, that's whatever you think dirty means.
I'm trying to decide if I want to follow you kind of in that direction or if I want to just go and start talking about, you know, the game-clinching drive.
Let's go to the game-clinching drive, which was great.
I wonder if, you know, if Dan Sorensen and, like...
Seth's not here to say
I was going to say Seth's not here. I think that if Dan Sorensen's name was Vontaze Burfict, he'd be advertised in a very different way. That's all. And it's not one-to-one, you know? But it's... Who else gets a nickname that is about, you know, dislocating Mike Gesicki's arm on a tackle? You know what I mean? Like,
now, look, my father loves Dan Sorensen, okay? Okay, I'm gonna read you a text from my father, Michael Taylor, he could have texted me after the Mahomes touchdown, he could have texted me after Travis Kelce literally murdered a man!
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that happened 7 days ago, but oh my god, that was the dirtiest route I've ever seen.
My father could have texted me about any of these things. And I quote, Dan Sorensen !! They keep trying to replace him and he just keeps making plays. So, I mean, look, he also put his helmet into a man's chest when he was asked by a coach who's no longer employed to run a fake punt when they were up a billion points on the wrong side of the field. Look, if you give opportunities, Dan Sorensen is going to thrive. And whatever you think the word dirty means, the Chiefs are going to be out here saying that it's dirty and it's Dan and it's Dirty Dan.
The one text I got from my dad today, I like this new segment, texts from our fathers. The one text that I got from my dad today was from about noonish. So before, you know, well before the game. And it just said, Rex Ryan just said, don't believe the hype on the Chiefs because their last 7 wins were by such a slim margin.
Wow. They got Rex on this? Oh.
Rex is out here. Listen, you want to talk about tiptoeing up to the line. Let's talk about Rex Ryan. That's a joke about a foot fetish, everybody. Just want to put it out there. That's what that joke was about. Sorry if you're listening to the show in the car with your kids or whatever. It's fine.
Just whatever you see. I am encouraging folks to tweet at all three of us. Yeah, including Seth. He ain't here. I just encourage people to tweet at us. What is your definition of dirty? Because I'm so conflicted.
Let's talk about that game stealing drive, Nate. Oh man, that was dirty. That was dirty in its own way. Here's what happened there. So I'm gonna go back to something else in a little bit. I'm gonna reserve. You know, I know when I want to take my. When I want to take my contested three in this game, I know in this podcast, I know when that's coming from me. It's coming in a little bit, but the Chiefs end up with the ball with a chance to just straight up end it. There are 1,000 little things we could talk about, but that's the big one by the end. There is a second down play that breaks pretty bad, where Travis Kelce said after the game, he didn't hear the full call or he heard something wrong.
Yeah.
I believe he said like he needs to listen to the full call. And so my guess there was that there was something that someone else was doing that could have made what Kelce was doing some form of option based on what he was reading from the defense. I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's purely speculative, but something was going on there. And I take pretty like extensive notes during the game so I can go back and get all this specifically right and everything. And then after the 2-minute warning, I just have the phrase, I forgot to take notes. Because I was pretty invested.
You're emotional. That's all. You're just emotional out there, man.
I was engaged in that moment. I was not typing. I was watching. So I got to find the thing again here. So 2nd and 8 comes through.
Yes.
And he's looking for Kelce. Something goes wrong. Kelce doesn't run the right route.
It's one-on-one. Yeah, it's a one-on-one matchup, and that's the one you want.
And it's like it should have been there, and it wasn't. And as we found out later from both Kelce and Henny, Kelce did something wrong. So Chad Henny takes the sack, which at the very least gets you to the 2-minute warning. But the 2-minute warning comes and goes, and it's 3rd and 14. There's 2 minutes left. The Browns are down by 5. They're at the Chiefs. They're at their 35 right here. And Chad Henne drops back to pass. And I was surprised when he dropped back to pass on 2nd and 8. I was a little less surprised when he dropped back to pass on 3rd and 14. But to Chad Henne's infinite credit, he tucked it and ran. And that play was unfolding in slow motion, but Chad Henne got 13 of the 14 yards that he needed right about to midfield. Then 4th and 1 shows up, and he's in shotgun again. And at that point, I wasn't taking notes. Tony Romo was saying, this is a no play. This is a no call, no right. play. This is a no snap, whatever.
Look, can I tell you my favorite part?
Please, please.
I was literally shouting in the press box. I was like, they're in empty! What?
I think, did Daryl motion?
Yes, Daryl's on the perimeter on the right of the formation.
That's what, okay, yeah.
And Chad brings him back in and I go, like, look, he's not Cam Newton.
He's not Cam Newton.
Did he just become Cam Newton? They're in empty. That, I mean, can we just acknowledge that there's no team in the league 4th and inches? Yeah, go 5 wide with the running back.
With the running back.
What?
And they let the clock run and go, wow, this is weird, isn't it? This is strange. Oh my God, Austin Ryder snapped it. No, Austin, that was an accident, right, Austin? And before you could get those words out of your mouth, Chad Henne had thrown the ball to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Running over by the sidelines, picked up about 5 yards. Tyreek Hill drops down. Ball game is over. I'm dropping things now because that whole series.
Hey, just reliving it makes so you want to make you. Woo!
You could have given me 1,000 guesses as to what would happen from 2nd and 8 on, and I don't know if I would have gotten to that one. So what was that like from the press box? What was it like seeing that series playing out? And then what's your retroactive analysis there?
Okay, stay with me here. Watching that was like, and you can look this up on YouTube. This is my analogy, Josh. Watching that was like watching the last 40 seconds of Legends of the Hidden Temple when you're on the boss run and you're just trying to get out of the temple with whatever the artifact is. Have you watched Legends of the Hidden Temple?
This has been a touch point that I've wanted to be able to connect to so many times, but I just missed it. I just barely
missed it. My heart. All right, so for people of a certain age, you would have your two partners, and you let the first homie go in. Homie's going through the doors, solving all the problems. Next door opens up. Oh, my God, there's a temple guard. We don't have enough pendants. Here comes Chad Henne. And the whole time is against you. The situation is terrible. I don't know why the Chiefs are passing on 2nd and 8, but they know that they can get a one-on-one matchup with Travis Kelce. So in some ways, it is like going through the temple, going down the same path that your teammate just took you on. Now you just got to open up that next door, got to get that artifact, got to get out before the 2 minutes are up. What happens on 2nd and 8 is Travis Kelce's fault. He does acknowledge that. He didn't hear the right portion of the play call that mattered to him. He ran like a 15-yard route when, dog, it's 2nd and 8. Mm. And the quarterback is not mobile like Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. So he acknowledges that. All of a sudden, it's 3rd and 14. Shout out to Chad. In a similar way, it's like, well, hey, I got my pendant. Here comes another Temple guard. Here, dog, just had a pendant. Can I just get one more chance to run through this bad boy? So he takes the sack. It's the smart thing to do. You take it to the 2-minute warning because Cleveland has no timeouts, which, by the way, Kevin Stefanski.
I mean, those were like obvious. I was like, this game was close the whole time.
I had higher expectations,
Kevin.
Sir. I had higher expectations of you. You got them boys ready from your couch last week.
Yeah.
And you sitting up here on the sidelines making these. It's not worth the 5 yards, dog. It's literally not worth the 5 yards.
Yeah.
So you don't have any more pendants. The temple guards are still out there. You got to get this thing and get it back. On 3rd and 14, he understood the pocket in a way that I am still to this day flabbergasted. Because Garrett is there. Garrett's waiting on him, and he somehow gets by it. Now, give credit to Eric Fisher, who pushes his guy a little bit past the pocket. And I think the Browns had the right call. They double-teamed Tyreek. They double-teamed Travis Kelce. And here's why Sammy Watkins is so important.
Mm.
Because in a one-on-one matchup, Sammy Watkins can beat his defender in a better on a better success rate than DeMarcus Robinson. Mm-hmm. DeMarcus Robinson doesn't get open. He's still covered. And so Chad Henne makes the smart move and just says, well, I have to run, but at the same time, I can't go out of bounds and I can't fumble. Y'all, watch DeMarcus on this play. Watch him on the play if you get a chance. He is standing flat-footed like, yo, what are you doing?
Yeah, I saw it. I just saw him at the end of the play, and I thought, oh, he could have thrown a block and made it into the game right there, right? Okay, I'm glad that wasn't just me, because I didn't even say anything about that.
And so DeMarcus is like, yo, what? And sometimes when you get the artifact and you know you got, that's the best part of Legends of the Hidden Temple, is those 20 seconds where you got it. Because once you get the artifact, all the doors unlock. And now it's just you getting through the maze as much as possible. And in a matter of about the same amount of time, about 30 seconds, the Chiefs understood the situation. Andy Reid said, well, this is our easiest way to escape. They had already discussed the certain play that they wanted from Chad Henne's perspective, if he was in the game, on a 4th and 1 or less situation. And this is the brilliance of a coaching staff that has worked together for years with a veteran quarterback who, even though he's never been in this situation before in his 13-year career, he's never played in the playoffs. You literally saw Chad Henne run through the maze and get out alive.
And it's hold on, like, did kids die in that show? Did they kill the kids?
It's one of the most fulfilling, exhilarating experiences of my 13-year-old childhood. Again, I wanted to be on the Legends of Hidden Temple so bad. But I love what Andy Reid tried to do after the game, which was like, who are you talking about? What? Huh? And shout out to our guy Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride was like, Coach, was that the same play as Miami? And Andy was like, no! That's a different play! No! No, you know, it's similar. But it ain't the same play.
You know the Key and Peele sketch, the Obama anger translator?
Yes.
You doing like a high energy Andy Reid translation is something that I appreciate.
What are you talking about? Because it's the same play we ran against Miami. No! Is Tyreek Hill in the slot? I mean, yeah. Is it three wide receivers to the right? I mean, yeah. Is the backside tight end blocking still? Sure. Is the running back rolling out to block the defender on the perimeter that could most affect the quarterback's quick throw to the right side of the formation? Why are you looking at our plays like this? Y'all was the same play from the Miami Dolphins game. So, again, I just enjoy the idea that the coaching staff and Chad Henne understood what he's good at. They use the player to the best of their ability in Tyreek Hill's skill set. And unlike the Miami game, Tyreek Hill actually didn't go out of bounds. He actually stayed in bounds. The game was over. And saying that all again in my head to our listeners still stuns me, Josh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, it's just when the only reason that we can ever talk about stuff like that happening is because whenever Patrick Mahomes does it, you're like, oh yeah, he's sort of an optical illusion. Like he's a riddle that doesn't quite make sense, right? Whenever yes. Chad Henne does it, you're like, well, his name's Chad. Like he just like that, he's a dad. Like he's I don't mean a father. I mean like he's like a dad. Like are we sure? Is that just something that Chad Henne could do? Like what? Are you kidding me? Like it just it doesn't quite compute. I can make a reference that's way more niche than the one that you just made, so I am gonna sidestep it because it's incredibly, incredibly specific. But it just you see it and it doesn't quite make sense. You see it and you can't fully comprehend it. It's just like it's like it's been redacted, but it's still there somehow. You sort of have this blank space in your mind of what something crazy happened in that game, but I could not paint it from memory for you for $1 million because it just doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't. And I think Chad was pretty honest after the game in saying that, like, you know, coming to the Chiefs, you know, extended his career maybe longer than it would have if he had gone elsewhere. Just because you get to work with Andy Reid every day, and it is like going to a master class, even though you've been in the NFL for 10 years, right? I mean, yeah. He was a 10-year veteran before he arrived in Kansas City. And then in being honest, Chad Henne was pretty blunt in being like, look, I know my job here is to kind of support Patrick. Patrick's done way more for me than what I've done mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. And this is why I play, because all those guys are clearly like the job is enriching for even Chad Henne, and it gets that much more appreciative when everybody sees that he obviously works like he's going to be the starter, even though he's never supposed to play if the plan goes accordingly. But I just think the adoration that Henne has for Mahomes, and then Mahomes, who, by the way, may have a concussion or may not have a concussion, was out here tweeting anything is possible with Kevin Garnett after winning, I believe, the 2008 NBA Finals with the Boston Celtics. So, like,
did the Celtics only won one, right?
Yeah, that big three only won one.
Yeah, so whatever year that was, it was that one.
It was 08 because I think the Lakers beat the Orlando Magic in 09, and then they had their repeat over the big three Celtics in 2010. So
the fact that the Magic were in an NBA,
Dwight Howard in full shooters,
2009, unbelievable. It's unbelievable. That doesn't make any sense.
Now, y'all, there were, and again, if the Chiefs don't make it to the Super Bowl, just remember there was a time where LeBron James was limitless, and he still got beat by Dwight Howard in four shooters.
Now, this might be the best indication that Seth isn't on this podcast today. Because we're talking about basketball that happened after I was born. So
yes. Really, Stan Van Gundy was like, you know, threes are more than twos. If we just shoot a lot of threes and Dwight gets all the rebounds, we may actually beat them. So it happened.
All right, listen. So we've made it nearly to the end of this podcast. And I feel like basically we've had like two basic moods. And one is like Patrick Mahomes, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, where are we at right now?
Right.
And then we had Chad Henne and everything that happened after that. Chiefs defense, some real praise to give out.
Real praise.
Henne, the defense, pretty much all the pass catchers.
By the way, L'Jarius Sneed is a dude.
He really is.
He's a dude, really. Did y'all hear Landry's name much? Not when he was on him.
He was silent. No, you're right. Legarius Sneed, worth a shout out. Darrell Williams, listen, man, I got snarky running back comments for days, and I didn't tweet one single one of them, and I'm not gonna.
Yeah, you've been on this train from the jump of this podcast.
And I just listen, man. It's fine. It's all right. I don't need anybody to tell me how right and smart and handsome and talented I am. You know, I get it. I know where I am at this point. And also, I'm not trying to, like, be snarky while Clyde's hurt. That feels very distasteful. And it's not about Clyde. It's never been about Clyde. I like Darrell Williams. I've liked Darrell Williams for a really long time. And I think there are a really large number of running backs that can do good work in this offense, like Damien Williams.
He had a better day than Nick Chubb.
13, he sure did.
13 carries for 78 yards, 6 yards a touch on the ground. Also had 4 receptions for 16 yards. Nick Chubb combined for, I'm counting them in my head, 73 total yards. So he outplayed Nick Chubb with a similar amount of touches.
And the exact same number of carries, actually, which is crazy. And also, mm-hmm. that Browns offensive line is better than the Chiefs offensive line. But whatever. They had a lot of injuries today, also. We get it. But I'm bringing that up, not even as, you know, a little talking point. I'm not even doing that. Because I don't think running backs move the needle, but I do think you should acknowledge whenever a running back, like, has a nice game, does some good work, takes what the offensive line gives him, good for Darrell Williams. I've always liked Darrell Williams. Here's the one thing, though. We've gotten lots of positive stuff. I feel like we got the shout-outs. Feel like we just got to the end of the mixtape, you know? Shout-out Darrell Williams. Shout-out everybody except for Harrison Butker, but even shout-out to Harrison Butker at one point. It's just, man, you got to figure out a couple of things. Here, I'm gonna be this guy for like a minute here. At one point, I kind of shifted my thought process from how are we going to talk about this game and then, you know, going forward to, oh, if they lose this game, what are we going to start with?
Mm.
Where is it? Because that seemed suddenly plausible
mm-hmm.
without Patrick Mahomes there. We hear the phrase chasing points a lot. It comes up on broadcasts all the time. They're chasing points. What does that mean? Nobody knows. But, but you know, they're trying to get every single point. They're being kind of needy. They're trying to get every point possible, even though it's early in the game, which I think is reasonable, but actually whatever. But you have some mistakes earlier on, right? You have the Baker Mayfield interception. No points, boinked field goal off of the goal post. Mm. You have the missed extra point.
Yep.
You've got at least 4 points there. Yep. You could argue 8. Okay. People talk about chasing points all the time. The Chiefs left some points on the board. But the one thing that really, really grinds my gears, and there's a companion play to this that I'll come back to that went very differently. But on the drive where Mahomes got hurt, Darrell Williams picks up 4th and inches. Drive keeps moving. 3rd and 5. Henny goes to Kelsey. Real close. It's 4th and 1 at the 15-yard line. The Chiefs at that point are up 19-10. And they kick the field goal. And man, that one really bummed me out. It's 1 yard. If you don't convert it,
I know how you're setting this up. Or know what you're leading to. Ooh, this is a very astute point.
I hope I actually do land the plane then where you think I'm landing it. You if you get the yard there, you're moving to touchdown town. If you don't get it, you're giving them the ball at the 15.
Yes.
But you're up 9 points, 19-10 in that spot. That is a mm-hmm. 2-possession football game, no matter how you slice it.
Yep.
The field goal puts you up 12 points. That is a 2-possession game. It's 2 touchdowns and they're leading. It's different. It's more points by 3. I can do math. But it is a 2-possession game. And in a game like this, possessions are more important than the number of points oftentimes because that's how much wiggle room you have. You also do not know if you're getting your starting quarterback back. And you do not know if Chad Henne is going to be able to get you to the 15-yard line at any other point in this game.
Yep, exactly.
You don't know that you're going to revisit the red zone. You got Patrick Mahomes for more than half of this drive. You're there now. You're going to need to go get that touchdown. But you kick the field goal, and it goes from being a 2-possession game to a slightly higher 2-possession game. You don't know if you're getting your quarterback back. If you go get the touchdown there, then you have an option of do you try to make it, you know, it's 19-10 at that point. Do you go 26-10? It is still a 2-possession game at that point. You got to get 2 2-point conversions, though. So it's a 4-play lead over where the Browns would be. Or you could go for 2 and try to make it a 3-possession game, which would have thrilled me.
But they don't go for it there. They kick the field goal. A little while later, there's another fourth and one to end the game. And they go for it in a way more tumultuous space, a way riskier space, just in terms of like the flow or the feel of the game, which is how Andy Reid talks. Andy Reid says, hey, I decide this stuff based on gut feel. It drives me crazy that there is not a consistent formula there. I'm not even saying there needs to be a spreadsheet that everything gets decided by. But the fact that you can kick the field goal to go from 9 to 12 on the 15-yard line, but you are letting your dong hang out on fourth and inches to end the game.
From midfield. Because if you don't get it, Baker Mayfield's already in Hail Mary territory.
Yes, he's at midfield. And you got to get the touchdown still, but he is closer than he would have been at the 15-yard line. And this is to go to the AFC Championship game. Like, these are big stakes. And I thought Andy Reid made the right call. I was tickled also by them going for it on fourth down to end the game there. I also wouldn't have faulted him for not and saying our defense has been pretty good there.
Right.
But it drove me nuts to see them not take that opportunity. On fourth and one in the red zone. It's one of the safest possible places, and you don't think you're probably going to have Patrick Mahomes again in the game. And that's where it ended. That was the final score. The Chiefs scored 22 points. They did not have another legitimate scoring opportunity after then, and they made two incredibly different types of choices. Andy Reid said it in his post-game press conference on the fourth and one at the end of the game. He said, everyone knew on the sideline we were going for it. And everybody, me, EB, Kafka, we all...
Joe Blamire.
Blamire. We were going for it. Joe was coming up with plays, and he was thinking about it when it was still third and 14, which is a crazy way to think because you have to get exactly 13 yards for it to even be... Whatever. They had it all in line there, but the easier situation to go for it, they took a field goal that did not impact, that did not change the game. They would have won this game 19-17 like they won it 22-17. I guess it could have changed the Browns' striking distance by that point, but you've got to think that right there. You want to talk about putting your foot on their neck? You could have done it right there, and they didn't, and they're inconsistent.
I have one point to further push your argument, and then I have another one that goes against you from sort of a Ted Lasso standpoint.
I've only watched the first episode of Ted Lasso. I enjoyed it very much, but I'm not done with it.
It's such a great show. I finished it last week.
Very exciting.
You know, when Chad Henne came onto the game after Patrick Mahomes went down, what was the downy distance, Josh?
Fourth and inches.
Did they go for it?
They did. Darren Williams picked that baby up.
So here's your inconsistency. Like,
yeah.
The backup quarterback is literally in the game.
Yeah, they literally did a three plays earlier. Literally, oh my, what are we doing?
What are they doing? Now, so I think ultimately, in a win or go home situation, you are correct. Not disagreeing with you. Like, they
Danielle, can you edit to where I said earlier, I mentioned also that they went for fourth and inches like two plays sooner, because that's also an incredibly useful point. Sorry, Nate, please continue.
So you're right. In a Ted Lasso world where the head coach has to keep everybody in mind, I do wonder, based on how the game was going and the fact that Andy Reid is, you know, aggressive, maybe he thinks, hey, we are going to get back to the 15-yard line again, even with, you know, Chad Henne coming cold. He may have done that for Harrison Butker's psyche. Because you're going to need Harrison Butker for the AFC Championship game, and you need to see him see that ball go through them uprights a couple more times. Now, no one wants to mention Ricky Seals-Jones because he had not played all year. Holy smokes. He knocked them out of field goal range. So yeah. I think part of Andy Reid's thinking was, if we get three here, which they did, you know, he actually made it from, you know, I'm just going to double check. He did make a kick from 33 yards out. Mm-hmm. And if Ricky Seals-Jones doesn't have a horrific, what do they call that penalty?
I don't know. Crackback.
An illegal crackback block. Dude, yeah. If you don't even touch him, we good.
Yeah.
Because they were actually at the Cleveland 23-yard line. So they were just outside of red zone. So Andy Reid is thinking, well, we're already up 12. If we get another one, if we get another field goal, if I get Harrison Butker one more opportunity to see that ball go through them uprights, get your confidence back. Now you're up 15, and you make the Browns really have to go, obviously, two touchdowns, and at least one of them has to be the two-point conversion. That is, like, next-level coach thinking that I'm trying to give Andy Reid an out, but altruistically, in a win-or-go-home situation, they should have went for it on fourth and inches from the 15-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, it opened the door for Harrison Butker to have a great psyche on his couch next weekend. Like, it's just that you can't leave those types of points on the board in a game that is close. Like, you can afford to do some of that stuff whenever Patrick Mahomes erases your mistakes. But
yeah, without your franchise quarterback, yeah. But Harrison Butker had missed two kicks from that distance, and so Andy was like, "I'm gonna give you one more try." And look, he made it. So
he didn't.
You know, maybe Harrison will be back to his excellent self next week. But I do think there was some level of if I go for it now, it may benefit us in the immediate, which it probably would have, all things considered. But what does that do psychologically to Harrison Butker next week? Who, you know, just wanted to provide a little different perspective of everybody. You know, the head coach has to consider everyone here. But they should have went for it on fourth and inches from the
15. It's also just that it's kind of random for Andy Reid. Like, it's just he's got plays to do it, and he's willing to do it. It's just super inconsistent.
Yeah, he's wildly inconsistent until you tell him, "Yo, we win the game if we go for it." Because then he gets really consistent, even with Chad Higgins.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all of that's really interesting. We've gone over our usual time, even with just the two of us. It was a busy game, a lot going on. Here's one more thing. The Chargers hired the Rams defensive coordinator as their head coach. Didn't see that one coming, huh? I'll tell you this. If you Google Brandon Staley, you're all going to see the face of a man you've never seen before. So that's
he was,
the new Chargers
head coach. Because he was in a mask all year, too.
That's exactly right. Dude's been under a mask this year. I don't know who he is beyond I've seen his eyebrows. And the good news is he won't have to move or change any of his wardrobe because the Rams and Chargers logos look pretty much the same at this point. And Eric Bieniemy is not getting the job.
What if I told you a head coach got a job based on the production from Jalen Ramsey, Hall of Fame cornerback, and Aaron Donald, Hall of Fame defensive tackle. But Eric Bieniemy can't get a job, at least not yet, has not been given a job offer based on the Hall of Fame talent of quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, right tackle. Should we continue?
Well, also, just, you know, one other thing to mention here is Dan Campbell's going to be the Lions' next head coach, and you may think, Dan Campbell, did he coach the Dolphins after they fired Joe Philbin? And I'm like, yeah, that's what happened. That's where he's come from. That's cool, guys. Dan Campbell, Brandon Staley, cool. Yep, that's gonna do it. See you guys. Chargers Lions Super Bowl in 2 years, probably. That'll do it. I'm not bitter.
I'm fine. At all.
Show's gone on too long. We'll talk more about Eric Bieniemy in the future, and we'll talk about the Chiefs hosting their third consecutive AFC Championship game later in this week. You can follow Seth on Twitter, but you don't have to because he wasn't here for this, at Real Lemon Chiefs Fan. Nate will have all sorts of updates all week long about Patrick Mahomes. Anything that Nate finds out, you can see it on Twitter at by Nate Taylor. Plus, of course, everything he's writing up in The Athletic. I am at JB Briscoe. I am always talking into a microphone somewhere. That's it. That's the show. We did it. Thanks for listening, everybody. And don't get slammed by a chokehold. And also, just go see if the Texans will give you their job. Because you might get it. You, listener. You might be the next head coach of the Houston Texans. Nate, wrap us up.
You honestly might do a better job than most coaches, honestly, given the selection that they have done with already. But secondarily, the Chiefs have gone to the AFC Championship game. It is wildly impressive. And, you know, the season just hangs on, you know, a concussion evaluation to the best player in the league. And, you know, Dan Sorensen continued to be Dan Sorensen.